When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello there, this is Eat Sleep Work Repeat. I'm Bruce Daisley. It's a podcast about making work better. Bonjour, bonjour. I hope you're well. I've been out and about the last few weeks, evenings taking me to Manchester. I've got events coming up over the next few weeks in Liverpool, Manchester, Birmingham, Newcastle, and a few evening events in London too. So, but the thing I've really enjoyed over all of that is people coming over and saying hello. So I love people coming over and sharing the stories of what they've been doing in their work culture or the things that they're really inspired by. So please do come over if you're able to join any of those events. I'd love to see you there. You can find all of the previous episodes on the website eatsleepworkrepeat.fm. A couple of things today. One of the things that's consistently popular when we look at the rituals of different organisations are the things that certain companies do to bring their culture to life. So today we'll be chatting to the MD of innovations company IDEO, Sue Siddle. He's going to tell us how they bring the power of telling stories to life in their organisation. But before that, we've got a legend of workplace study today. So William Kahn was responsible for creating two of the big concepts of positive workplaces. Anyone who studies these things will have used the phrases both psychological safety and employee engagement. If you're interested in psychological safety, not only did I cover it at great length in The Joy of Work, but this week's New Work Now mail out linked to a full study of Amy Edmondson's new book, The Fearless Organization. So psychological safety is our ability to admit mistakes, speak up, confess problems, and it tends to build trust and a collective bond between people in organisations. Amy Edmondson spends a lot of time in her book talking through examples of bad psychological safety. So she tells graphic stories about places like VW with Dieselgate, Nokia or Wells Fargo, where the bosses didn't want to hear bad news and threatened employees with severe consequences if they failed. If you're interested in a full study of Edmondson's new book, you'll find it on our Twitter by searching Eat Sleep Work Repeat or on the website eatsleepworkrepeat.fm. So it's sort of the book for people who aren't going to get around to reading the book. Now, back to today's discussion. William Kahn coined both of the expressions psychological safety and employee engagement. And he's able to have a degree of distance from what's happened to them since he popularised them because he's really removed himself from the study of them subsequently. He gives an intelligent and evidence-based take on what these concepts represent and how they're being used in modern workplaces. Let's go straight into the discussion with Professor Kahn. Professor William Kahn, Bill Kahn, is Professor of Organisational Behaviour at Boston University's Questrom School of Business. He received his BA in psychology from Clark University and his doctorate in psychology from Yale. Here's Professor Kahn. I'm so thrilled to talk to you because I guess in the sort of the almost 30 years, 27 years since you put some of your thoughts together, the idea of employee engagement has become massively the currency across companies across the world. I wonder if you could just take a step back for us and Professor Kahn, and give us a sense of what the world was like when you made that proposal, that suggestion. What were you reacting against?
It's a great question. When I did that initial work, it was actually, believe it or not, based off my dissertation. So it was the first real piece of research I had done on my own. And I was really reacting to theories of job motivation, job design, employee alienation, things like that. And most of that, in fact, all of that work really shared a basic premise. And the premise of that initial work was that individuals were not really at the center of their own job involvement. They were not at the center of that. That is, they were done to. If managers just could figure out the right levers, and those levers were often extrinsic, having to do with money and promotions and things like that, if they could only figure out the right levers, then employees would essentially move ahead or move forward or work hard or not work hard. I had this sort of gut sense that there was something else going on, that individuals were much more intentional and could make very, very important choices consciously and, by the way, unconsciously as well, to really bring themselves into the moment of a task or the ongoing life of a role. And when I say bring themselves into, I mean really make themselves personally and emotionally and intellectually available in ways that researchers had not really considered before. That was my sort of impulse. I didn't know what it meant. It was just my initial impulse.
And so you, from your degree dissertation that you put this together, could you maybe help by illustrating, as important as the concept of engagement, there's the concept of disengagement. And yeah. I just wonder if you could illustrate what those two states look like.
Yeah. So, you know, and people are pretty familiar with disengagement. And they sometimes talk in different kinds of language about disengagement. They talk about burnout or sense of emotional exhaustion, you know, but disengagement.
That burnout is the thing I'm particularly interested in, because disengagement isn't necessarily like this passive aggression, this sense that you disdain your job.
No,
but often it can be, you're just exhausted by it, right?
Yes. I mean, I think of disengagement not as passive aggressive anti-organization. I think of it much more as someone making themselves absent, right? You know, and you see it when you walk in, when you walk up to certain people, particularly who have routine service jobs, and you see sort of an absence in their eyes, sort of a no vacancy sign there right above their forehead. And they're just, you know, they don't see you as a person. They don't see themselves as a person in that moment, in that role, in that task performance, right? So there's an absence there, almost a robotic quality. And that's how I initially understood disengagement, that people were just not available. They were not sort of in our common vernacular. They were not online. They were offline. And I think of disengagement as sort of being offline emotionally, intellectually. People aren't curious. They're rote. They're going through the motions, as opposed to engagement, where there's a sense, there's a human being there. They're alive. They're present. They're curious. They're interested, or they're upset, or they're frustrated. I think of people who are frustrated or angry. Sometimes I think they're incredibly engaged. Right? They might not like what's going on, but at least they care about something. Right? They personally care about something. Right? So that's how I really consider engagement versus disengagement.
And you came, so in the initial work, you have these three concepts: meaningfulness of work, psychological safety, and psychological availability. Meaningfulness of work, I think we can all understand that. We can sort of get a sense about that. Psychological safety has obviously had a lot of coverage subsequently. I'd love you to go into psychological availability, what you mean by that.
Yeah, so initially it was sort of an unformed concept when I first wrote about it. Availability was really, you know, in the initial research, it was if someone was just had too many other demands pulling upon them, whether it was family stuff or they were asked to do too many things, then they didn't have the energy. They didn't have the stamina or the drive or the fuel to really allow themselves to be fully engaged in the moment, right? There was just, it was, you know, we can think of it as sort of a gas tank, right? Their gas tank was just empty, and so they just weren't available. And since then I've thought about it a lot more, this availability piece. And for me, it really has to do with people, again, consciously or unconsciously, making intentional choices to bring themselves to the forefront of the actual interaction or the work that they're actually doing at that moment. And I don't know how those choices are made necessarily. But I think it's very related to the notion of safety. That is, I make myself available. I bring myself to the forefront of what I'm doing. When I feel like I'm not going to get hurt in some way, however I define hurt. I think those two are intimately related. In fact, I think all three conditions are intimately related. But I think people have a much more intuitive general sense of the meaningfulness of work. And I think in some ways that the meaningfulness condition was probably the less innovative part of that work, because it was building off things like job design and the meaning of work. I think the safety and availability were probably the two sort of more innovative pieces, but I think of the three of them as incredibly important.
So I guess the reason why this has become the currency of workplace discussions in the years since is because a lot of the thinking comes down to the idea that if you can produce a worker who's engaged, then you can access this sort of magical discretionary effort. The level of commitment goes up. There's a sort of superpower that people apply to it, that we apply when we feel like we've got an engaged job. Do you want to just talk through? What I'm interested in now is understanding the measurable upside of these. Have you been able to prove the impact of discretionary effort?
So here's what's interesting, and you may or not know this, but I haven't really worked on engagement explicitly. It was my initial work. I did it for a while. But my work in general is I do theory development. I do this very intensive ethnographic, almost anthropological, qualitative work where I go in and I live with people for a while and I interview them and I watch them and I get to know them, and to the point where they feel like it's safe enough to really open up to me and work with me to explore their actual experience of the work they're doing. And from that, I then develop theory. I then develop a framework or concepts like, or dimensions such as meaningfulness, safety, and availability. Other people in the world are much better at and much more drawn to testing theories. So I haven't really, it's a long answer to a short question. I haven't really tested out the impact of these dimensions. I've left it to other people to do, and they've done it.
I'm just interested in the whole industry that sprung up from engagement. I used to work in a company where, because engagement was measured and then measured down to the team level, team leaders sort of wandered around seeing their own scores, and bosses would sort of mandate that people would give them high scores and would stage interventions. Does the subversion of the system disappoint you?
Well, let me step back for a second and then I'll answer that question. I've also been intrigued, stunned, amazed, and disappointed with what has happened with the whole engagement industry. But I want to note that my original work talked about personal engagement. The consulting firms that sprung up, or the firms that have sort of exploited that, shifted it to employee engagement. And I actually think the shift is really interesting, because when I spoke, in my own idealistic, liberal professor way, academic way, when I talked about personal engagement, I was actually thinking about it from the perspective of the person, right? That is, what is it that allows them to show up in some powerful, authentic way in the work they're doing, right? And the shift to employee engagement, while subtle, is also incredibly important, because that became that the perspective then became, how do organizations get their employees to work harder, to use, in your words, discretionary effort? How do we get them to do it? And so the shift from personal engagement to employee engagement really was a shift from the perspective and caring about the experience and the humanity of individuals versus how do we care about the organization's desire to get people to work harder. Now, I'm not saying in that in any way that's a Big Brother evil thing. I just think the shift is really important to note. And so it is no accident, I think, or it does not surprise me, that the movement toward engagement metrics and sort of team managers understanding that that their own livelihood and their own financial rewards and their promotions depend on others thinking that they're creating a setting in which people are really engaged. Any system like that is bound to be subverted, of course. And so am I surprised by it? No. And the only other thing I'll say here, Bruce, is that in the shift from personal engagement to employee engagement, the issues of safety and availability really got lost. Because again, those are linked to the internal authentic experience of individuals. Does all of that make sense to you?
It really does. Because, you know, one of the things I think that people might have experienced of employee engagement, obviously like transformational idea that's taken hold. But some of the firsthand experiences, especially in the hands of people who are maybe less proficient, some of the firsthand experience feels like a lot of questions. And then people, as they're exposed to PowerPoint slides, they're exposed to sort of this 70 slide PowerPoint deck. And to some extent, in the hands of those maybe less accomplished practitioners, these employee engagement programs have replaced good managers and better training for managers.
Right.
And what you talk about there, it largely points to the same thing.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. Like any useful concept, the people who are looking for ways to authentically engage the people that they're working with or who are working for them and create really sort of driven people, curious people, authentic people, and to create teams that are vibrant, I think they'll use these ideas in really wonderful ways. And use any idea. They'll be sort of Catholic in their taste. They'll borrow from everywhere and anything, sort of like, Bruce, frankly, what you're doing and what sort of is driving your quest around these things, right? Whereas other people who are much more instrumental will use this concept and this metric like they would any other, which is, how does it benefit them? You know, I'm too much of a psychologist to be surprised by that.
It's a touch like Net Promoter Score, right? That in the essence, the first discovery of that seemed to have some really good truth in it. And you've got to avoid the people then who are trying to co-opt it for their own objectives rather than trying to serve customers better.
Correct. Exactly right.
I'm not sure if your theory inventing perspective will give you a take on this, but I suspect what motivated you will. You talk about the importance of relationships in the workplace. And I just wanted your perspective, especially in the context of employee engagement, for you to give me a perspective of how important you thought workplace friendships are. In the stuff that I saw that you talked, you talked about sort of relationships that facilitated doing the job better. But I was interested whether it even went further than that, whether someone having a best friend at work, where there was sort of an overlap of work life and personal life, whether that would actually increase their employee engagement.
So I think so. And the reason I think so is because having someone with whom you can be open and vulnerable to help you think through, to help you sort of really be thoughtful about your experience and unpack your experience and unpack sort of the ways in which you are making choices consciously and not, having that, I think, is the wellspring in some ways of what engagement is, because that kind of experience, you know, off to the side, behind closed doors for 20 minutes during a workday can help, you know, that kind of experience is all about safety and making yourself available, which then I think translates into what does it mean to become more thoughtful and intentional and alive in your interactions with others. I think we all have that experience. You know, there's a developmental psychologist, British from named John Bowlby, and he wrote wonderfully about a concept called a secure base. And he developed it around sort of parent-child relationships, but it fits really well with adult-adult relationships. And a secure base essentially is when someone is startled or confused or upset or frustrated, to go back to someone who helps them both understand their experience and make interpretations about the situation, that then allows that person to go off again and explore and create and produce. that's what friendship at work does when it works really well. And I don't think anyone can be fully engaged without that.
Yeah, and it's also a harder thing to, for, I mean, I guess it's the sort of thing that'd be lost by people who are trying to game the numbers, right? I read you say something like that employee engagement works best when we treat people as real partners. I think that was the expression you used. I'm trying to find it in my notes.
And
it seems like that. It's like when you treat this as like an emotionally empathetic attempt to build a sort of a tightly bonded team of people who respect each other, that works really well. When you've got a cynical perspective of just trying to shift the metrics, that might be lost in that process.
Yes, that's exactly right. And, you know, and I think the word cynical is well used there, right? Because it, you know, when someone is, I think cynical is in some ways a function of disengagement, right? Because there, you know, when I say engagement, it really is about a notion of authenticity. That is, the person in all their flaws and curiosities and gifts and strengths and weaknesses, they show up, right? Now they do it in ways that are thoughtful and sort of situationally aware of what's going on around them, so they're not sort of, you know, they're within the boundaries of appropriate behavior, but they're human, right? And they're messy and chaotic. People who are cynical, I think, you know, in some ways they're disengaged because there's such a calculation, right? You know, when I think of people who are fully disengaged, they calculate precisely, not consciously, but unconsciously calculate precisely how much they actually have to show up in any moment of interaction or work. And they do the minimal amount possible in order to complete the task without in any way putting themselves at risk or of depletion of energy or relationship.
Yeah, that's it. That sense of that'll do. It's just good enough to get you over the hurdle, but no more.
Yeah, exactly.
Back with more of the interview with Professor Khan and an inspiring story from IDEO straight after this.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now back to the show. In the 27 years since you sort of gifted this concept to the world, what's the thing that you've been most proud of? But is there anything in particular that you feel you've been inspired and proud of that in particular?
I would say that I am most proud of the fact that people use the concept of engagement, even if it is simply employee engagement. When they use the word engagement, it brings them to a different conversation than that of job involvement or commitment. That is, engagement really is, you know, when if you think about the genesis of the word engagement, you know, initially it's about, betrothal, right? It's about sort of marriage. It's about sort of engaging the clutch of a car, right? All of that has to do with the intentionality of someone to make a commitment, to move ahead, either in a task or in a relationship. And what I really love about the word engagement, the fact that people use it, is it brings them to a place, to a conversation, where they're thinking about the intentionality of the person and the agency of the person, as opposed to the usual more passive narratives that essentially leave workers as victims of other people's desires.
Yeah, and absolutely. And any movement which has set about trying to foster the happiness and the day-to-day connection of people with their jobs and their colleagues has to be a good thing, right?
Yeah, you said that much better than I did.
It's been an honor to speak to you. Thank you so much for your generosity of time as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks to Professor Khan. Now, I mentioned listeners love to draw inspiration from other organisations, and the company IDEO draws admiring glances from many people who study great cultures. To the extent that quite often IDEO find themselves being asked to design new working cultures and new working practices for other companies. One of the ways they keep their innovations alive is by the rituals they create. And I love hearing about rituals that different companies have developed. There's a famous quotation from literature professor Joseph Campbell. He says, "If you want to understand what's most important to society, don't examine its art or literature. Simply look at its biggest buildings." And I think if you want to understand what a company values, look at the rituals it gives time to. If a company values employee interaction, there should be a social meeting. If companies value creativity, then they should set time away aside for creativity. Sue Siddle is the UK MD of IDEO. And I was really fascinated with so many things that IDEO can teach us about their culture. IDEO have been innovators for companies like Apple, Lego, some of the hottest names around. I went and chatted to Sue, and she told me about one ritual that they've created to show what they value. Here's Sue.
We have something called Story Nights, which started in New York, actually, but we're now doing in London. We do it every year. The idea is that we pick a topic each year and five people volunteer to tell a story around it. Now, storytelling is a really important part of our business and creative cultures. So it's actually building a skill, and those that choose to take it up also get training on storytelling. So last year, it was Unrequited Love was the theme. So quite personal, quite potentially embarrassing, really putting yourself out there. I did it, so I put my hand up.
Hello,
for it.
Right, okay.
I did it. And we go to a local pub, the same pub, and we take over the top floor, and there's, you know, a stage, and everyone turns up and everyone tells their stories.
Time limit or no?
It's roughly sort of 20 minutes.
Okay. Wow, big stories.
Here's what happens every year, and I did it last year. Here's what happens is the day before, everybody who's doing it tries to cancel it. No, I'm too busy, we've got too much work, because they are terrified of getting up and telling a personal story in front of the rest of the location.
Or suspect in their head when they agreed it was going to be this beautifully
miles
rendered,
away,
creative thing.
I'll have plenty
then they realise
time,
they've got no time
and
to do
then
it.
You're sort of like, I feel so vulnerable. Yeah. I'm standing up in front of my colleagues, which are often the most, you know, sort of tough audience, I suppose, or you think they are. And every year, Lorraine, who is head of experience, who runs that, goes, nope, we're doing it. Sorry, we're doing it, overriding you, and we all do it, and it ends up being brilliant.
Yeah.
And what it does is it, one, it allows us to laugh at each other.
Yeah.
Two, it allows us to be vulnerable in front of each other, and it allows us to develop a skill around storytelling that we all need. And things like that, again, creating safe havens for people to be creative and be vulnerable and connect with each other in different ways other than just work, I think is really important in terms of collaboration. Really helping people understand how to collaborate outside of work as well as inside of work.
Two fun discussions today. Thank you to both Sue Siddle and Professor Khan. Unbelievably, our next episode is an interview with business guru Jim Collins, who will be talking about his legendary book, Good to Great, and much, much more. You can find all of the episodes at the website, eatsleepworkrepeat.fm, and you can connect to me on Twitter, LinkedIn, wherever you fancy. See you next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer.
Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.